I'm Sarah Hyde. I've been hosting the Red Tent over the course of the weekend. And in just one moment, we're going to hear from Christina Gavrilovich on modern day slavery, a presentation, a bit of an interactive session. But just before we begin the session, just to say, obviously, some of the content of this is going to be quite explicit. If you need to go out and have a walk around, come back in, feel free. You know, the door will remain open. But just also to give that content warning. We're also recording the session. Just heads up for anybody about that. And I think that's it in terms of the notices about the session. I just was going to, as by way of intro, share a couple of quick stories from my own experience. I used to work running women's services, mostly for women who just come out of prison. And one day a colleague, because I was the manager, I only got given things that were tricky or complicated. And one day my colleague came out of doing the kind of initial interview with a woman. And she said, oh, I think you need to come and see this lady. It's all a bit weird. So I went and listened to this woman, and she had been brought over here from France. Can we just make some... Sorry, steward, can you just assist the lady to get into the venue, please? And this lady had been brought over here from France to live in someone's spare room to do their cleaning. And she'd worked for them for a long time, and then basically she'd been arrested for stealing some jewellery, and there was a whole other story after that. But I just was like, hang on a minute, let's just go back to where are you living now? And she was back living with this man that had brought her over from France for the specific reason of being his cleaner. And we kind of, I just asked some questions, and then we made some referrals to the relevant kind of people that are experts in modern slavery and trafficking. And I just think there's a lot of this stuff that's really hidden in plain sight. And I'm sure you're going to speak more about this. But just in some of the jobs I've done, I'm also a Labour Party activist. We were doing a door knocking session one time. This random woman joined us. It was lovely. We were having a chat. Turns out she was sleeping at the women's shelter nearby. And then she said to me, you must know lots of people. And I said, yeah, I do know quite a lot of people around here. She said, can you help me find a spare room? I'll do anything for it. It's fine. I'll do the cooking, the cleaning. I need somewhere to sleep. And I said, my darling, this is really dangerous what you've just said to me. And we had a little chat and went for coffee afterwards and tried to then help her find some appropriate accommodation. But I just thought there are so many situations which we're probably encountering people who are super vulnerable just every day through work, through political or church activisms in many spheres of our lives, where just being curious and maybe knowing who to refer on to is really, really key. So this is something that is pertinent for all of us, and so I'm really super delighted, and I'm not the expert, I'm going to hand over now to the expert, but just to kind of highlight how everyday this is, so I'm delighted. Could we give Christina a warm round of applause to welcome her to the Red Tent this afternoon? Thank you
very much, Sarah. I have build up a little bit based off some fans, I think. Thank you very much for those who saw me this morning and for coming back this afternoon. This morning session, I presented on what modern slavery actually is. So where do you find it? How to identify it? This afternoon, I want to focus on a specific type of slavery, which is sexual slavery. What does that look like for a human being? What's the impact and the human cost when we think about sex workers? And when we add to that trafficking as a sex worker, and then when we look deeper into it, you are trafficked to become a sex slave. So I'll walk you through. I'm going to leave it open, so please come through with questions. If you need to leave, please leave. I'm going to walk you through three cases that are quite detailed. I'm not going to read them out, but they will be on the screen. So if you're a fast reader, I'm just giving you the heads up that there'll be some violent content within those case studies. So I just want to show you what extreme looks like and what the other side of extreme in terms of sex slavery we encounter. Do I have anyone under the age of 18? How old? How far? 15. Parental guidance, I'm leaving it up to mom or the guardian, so I'll leave it up to you. So for us, sexual exploitation. When you hear sexual exploitation, what do you actually see? What's the image that comes into your mind? Just throw out some words. Brothels? Yeah. Do you see you're forced, someone is forced to, or someone it's exploited, perhaps because there may be children or they might be vulnerable? Do you see force, the word in your vision, in your image? Not necessarily. And that's the issue with the way they're phrased. Sex slavery. They are calling it sexual exploitation. And exploitation by its sheer nature suggests that you could come out of it. You are vulnerable and perhaps easier to fall prey of someone exploiting you. But actually you're not held. You're not, you know, you're not forced. You're not against your will. You're not chained up to a radiator. And you're free to come and go as you please. So for us, is victims are forced to engage in sexual activity. That happens for a number of reasons, whether it is a British-born individual or a foreign national. If there's debt, if there's poverty, if there's desperation, if there's vulnerabilities, if they've been sold by their own family members, they are, for a number of reasons, they could be pushed into it, but then they are forced to service males, females, makes no difference, in terms of sexual services. So they are forced, they have no choice. Yeah, they're using a number of locations. Brothels is probably the most common one. What does a brothel look like? What does a British-based brothel look like? Again, throw some questions out. Okay, so they are on the down in terms of massage parlors were quite high early 2000s. You see a massage parlor advertised, whether it's London or other places, guaranteed that that would be a brothel. You go through that front door and you have a number of women servicing sexual services. A brothel in today's age could be your next door neighbor's house. It could be a caravan on a holiday car park. It could be a house share. It could be a hotel. It genuinely does not have a particular look. It doesn't have a particular structure, not anymore. So let me tell you about a common case that came through a couple of years ago where this lady calls the police, and this was for Kent Police, and says, I've had this really odd note put through my letterbox. It's handwritten, and it says, please help me. The boss man is forcing me to sleep with lots of men, and I don't want to. That's it. So naturally, because there's a safeguarding issue, our officers went out. I should introduce myself, really, shouldn't I? I'll get to that part in a moment, perhaps towards the end. But my former role was to support two police forces. So there's a lot of law enforcement background that I have in terms of my experience. So officers go out and we speak to the lady who called the police. And it turns out that she found that note 3 days earlier, but she thought it was a joke and she didn't do anything about it. So we began doing house-to-house checks within that block of flats to try and identify who this lady is, who this female is. We found her, and we realized that that flat was being used as a brothel. She wasn't the only one, but it wasn't the only location. That was one of several locations that were privately rented, and females put through, and the brothel was running. So we talked to the neighbors and we said, did you not see different people coming in at different times and lots of movement, lots of noise? And they didn't. None of the neighbors, they could swear that they've never heard or seen anything that would be suspicious for what a ordinary flat residence occupant looks like. So that's how hidden it is. So a number of areas are used. Online platforms, they've grown, as you can imagine, absolutely everything. It's now online. So is this particular industry. And I mentioned this morning something called the dark web. And for those of you who now know what it is, please don't say anything. But for those of you who haven't, do you or have you heard of something called the dark web? Yeah? So for those of you who haven't, it's the online, a parallel online world to ours. So where you and I can purchase a holiday, a new pair of shoes, a weekly shop, say we could go through Amazon and purchase a number of items. A criminal can go onto the dark web and they can purchase their firearms, their drugs, they can put in their orders for their slaves, for sexual exploitation. So it's basically the online world for a criminal to purchase illegal and illegitimate goods. So we're seeing a growth in there, in being able to hire, so you can rent a slave for all purposes, or you can buy females, buy a trade in females, children and males for sex slavery. No one gains from it other than the criminals. It's as simple as that. One organized crime group was running several brothels in several countries, UK included. In 1 month, they were making 5 million euros profit out of the women that were in their brothels. 5 million euros profit. So it's just the criminals that gain from it. It's not the victims. Hopefully the internet works. I want to show you a short video. It's a 6-minute video. And it's basically two individuals who have encountered, who have came across sexual services. One who paid to receive the service, one who actually did the service. They're sitting on a sofa and they're just being asked to talk about their experience. So there's no sexual content, there's nothing violent in the video, but it just gives you two different perspectives from the customer and the individual who was paid to service that customer. Hopefully the internet works, and then we'll move on to some case studies and a few more details about this area. Any questions up until now? No? Okay. Let's see. Hopefully this will play. So he's saying it's not just about making money. These women are also looking to fulfill a sexual void, an emotional void. And that the business transaction was exactly just that. He walked into the bedroom, got on with it. He left feeling a little bit unfulfilled, but it is what it is. It's sex working, and I paid him for a service. Who he was actually using was a trafficked female who was lured to UK, I believe it was Bristol, to on a promise, on a Dublin, my apology, Dublin, to work as a nanny. Upon arriving, her identity documents were taken away. So just think about that for a moment. You're in a foreign country. I mentioned this morning. You don't know who you need to, who you can turn to. You can't speak the language. You can't trust the system. You don't know what's going to happen to you. You have no identity documents, no money, no credit, or a valid SIM card that would work in the country you're in. And trying to run away from the hands of someone who's going to use violence if necessary to keep you in the position you are in. So she, being the female that was given out the service to this male, she was saying things like, the customers are telling her, at least pretend to enjoy it, if nothing else, you know, just pretend. A campaign was run in Belgium last year where they've set up this hotline, and it was for sex working. So it was a sex sort of hotline, and customers would call up, but instead of getting a female satisfying the needs, they would get a female telling them their journey to being a sex slave. And they've actually had, once the campaign finished, they had more complaints from the so-called customers to the hotline for failing to do what it says than actual reports to police to report and say, I call this number, I think someone is in real trouble, they need help. So it just goes to show that it's not, it's still seen as something, as it is what it is. It's a 2,000-year-old tradition. It is a profession. There's nothing dark about it. But obviously, you'll see as I go through that it is. In terms of the online, it's also worth mentioning that on average, a county has several hundred online adult services advertised per county that you can access 24/7. Either you go to a location or they come to you. It is also worth to mention, as you know, sex working is not illegal if you do it by yourself and you are self-employed and you pay your taxes and so on. It is illegal if a brothel is being run and a number of workers are within the same area and they're managed by a madam or a pimp. Okay, so I apologize about the video, the sound, but you can find a lot of videos between 5 to 10 minutes long on a link, which I'm happy to send this presentation out to whoever they want. I'm going to try and find a way to do that with the organizers of this festival. But there is a website called, so you can see it yourself. The website is Encounters Festival, right at the top. Literally just need to go on there. Go to Unchosen, which is Unchosen Videos. Unchosen used to be an NGO that would only ever make videos on all types of slavery. So it's not just sexual. You have labor and you have children and so on. And they're all award-winning films based. Some of them are based on true cases. But that NGO closed down and their videos, so Unchosen Videos, are hosted by this particular website. So just look for Unchosen. And I promise you, you'll have a fantastic resource that really highlights how slavery actually looks like for us. Okay, so I told you about, I mentioned a case that's quite detailed. This particular lady, if you're a fast reader, I will give you now the heads up that there will be some content in there that you'll find upsetting. So I'll walk you through it without going into the detail. This female, this lady, is a British born. At the age of 12, she was groomed by her neighbor next door. She was hooked on diazepam very, very quickly, and a video of sexual content was made with her. Quite common method of recruiting. They will groom them or befriend them, make them fall in love, whether they are an old man or a young boy. Then they will be placed in compromising situations, and that particular piece of evidence will then be used to blackmail that particular child into doing whatever they need to do for them. Her trafficking and exploitation lasted 11 years. She was rescued at the end a few years ago in her early 20s after she completely rebelled against her traffickers and stated that she couldn't do it anymore. She couldn't service males. She couldn't do what she was told. And she was beaten quite severely. And some of the details of the injuries are there, to the point where she was left for dead beside the road. An A&E nurse thought that there was more to that assault than met the eye and called the relevant agencies and placed her into a safe house. At first, they suspected honor-based abuse simply because she looked Asian. What actually turned out to be was 11 years worth of incredible, I'm going to change now because I can see a few faces going a bit, worth of exploitation. During these 11 years, this individual attempted to attend school, but because of a drug addiction, she was missing schools because she was asked to be a sex worker. She wasn't asked, she was told to be a sex worker. She had to miss days at school when she was booked customers at various hotels. When she was arrested by the police, she was 15 at that time, performing an oral sex act on a customer in his vehicle. She was arrested for prostitution offences. What do you think happened to the male? Absolutely nothing. He was given words of advice and away he left, away he went. Her record shows her as a troubled teenager, liar, attention-seeking. And throughout her, this whole time, she was in and out of the national sort of government-run bodies, organizations. Not once did we ever pick up that there was something a lot worse and darker going on with her. So she was rescued, and since then she's been recovering. So it's been almost half a decade. And she now can no longer have children that due to the internal damage, and she's doubly incontinent. Her face had to be reconstructed surgically because of the assault, so she can't even recognize her old features. And this is just a normal community up in the middle of the country where this particular child was groomed and was exploited, and that went on because we didn't see what was happening to her. The only justice she got was on the actual old man that groomed her originally. He was in his 70s when he began grooming her, so he got a prison term. But everybody else, she couldn't remember dates, locations, descriptions, number plates, nothing. So she couldn't. Okay, another case. Very, very common, absolutely common. A lot of the countries such as Albania, Vietnam, China, due to debt, whether it's gambling, drugs or alcohol, family members are given out as a form of payment to that debt. Individuals are brought over to countries where they can be abused, where they can be exploited until such time that that debt is paid, or at least the family members are told that. They'll bring an individual over to UK, for example, and they will be told that all the expenses that they had to pay towards their travel into UK, illegal travel, so it's an average of about £10,000 per non-EU national to enter UK illegally, they have to now pay that £10,000 as well as the debt. When we talk about debt and loan sharks, we're not talking about, you know, £100 worth of gambling debt and you pay back £120. It's £100 worth of gambling debt and you have to pay back £1,000. You fail to do so, that'll go higher and higher. So it's loan sharking at its worst. So these individuals will work and work and work and work, and they will never pay that debt off. we had the same, the lady that I mentioned earlier, that she was found in this flat, she was brought over under the same pretenses. She managed to build an interest on the debt that the exploiters told her she had to pay back. In a space of 3 months, she built up a £35,000 interest on her £10,000 original debt. So until her body is broken and then she'll be recycled and sold on, she'll never pay off that debt. So that's another area, another form of sexual slavery. They're brought over as a form of payment. Last one. This one is incredibly... This happens more often than not. In fact, we have the lover boys technique and the kidnapping, the snatching sort of technique as the most common tactics used in some countries, especially Eastern Europe. And I'm not sure if you've seen the movie Taken, but if you have, it rings true in some of the parts. Of course, it's been dramatized. It's sort of Hollywood-based type movie, but there are elements that were clearly taken from real cases. You can identify with them if you've been in that area. So this particular female... young female, her price tag if she was a virgin would be around £4,500. If she wasn't a virgin, that would have been less. If she was 18 and not a virgin, she would have started around £2,500. That's the trade price. By the time she reaches UK, that child's price will come around £12,000 if her initial price was £4,500. She'll make that money in the first month of servicing males. Afterwards, it's just pure profit. But again, think of the guy who said, I just called up, I booked my appointment, I asked for what I wanted, I paid my fee, went to the bedroom, got on with it, left unfulfilled. So just think, most of the customers will see just that, just the sex worker. This particular female was just snatched. Everything was false that was given to her because she was a minor and she had to travel abroad and ultimately ended up in the same destination as most females, whether they are British-born or foreign nationals, into a enslavement, a forced situation. So these are just some case studies that I wanted to bring to you and show you how the differences between the different extremes of what sexual slavery looks like. But as far as we're all concerned, it's just a brothel with just some sex workers in it that are running as a business, as a profession. Any questions so far? No, you're just probably thinking, okay, not sure I signed up for this for a 5 o'clock on a Monday afternoon. I'm quite cold when it comes to this particular area, having been within this area for a few years. My background was always in the public sector sort of arena from Home Office and NHS and police forces, always specialist services. But I got into this particular area about 4 or 5 years ago because I could see that the focus on this hidden world wasn't there. I just couldn't see how can we become a commodity. What do you mean we're a product? You know, we're just bought and sold. I needed to understand more. The more you get into it, the more you see, the more you learn. And as I mentioned earlier, I supported two police forces in changing their response in identifying what is a victim of these particular crimes and what isn't. And I'm sorry, I haven't got time to go through what I went through this morning so you understand some of the areas where victims are found. And as I mentioned this morning, we took that record from 40 victims to 600 in a space of 18 months, just in two counties. But nationally, it's an increasingly more focused on area. So for us, sexual exploitation, we're seeing it on the increase, especially when it comes to child sexual exploitation and the gangs, especially from London, coming into the counties, the beautiful countryside, opening up county lines with drugs running, and they will always exploit the younger generation to help them go through. But let's think about the impact that it has on a human being. I would like you to spend 5 seconds thinking about the worst thing you've ever done. Don't say it out loud, just think it. Just 5 seconds, and I'll then tell you what to do next with it. But just for now, think. Worst thing you've ever done. Make it legal, please. Okay, now turn to the person next to you and say what that is. That's exactly, stop. That's exactly what, stop. Don't say it. Don't say your thought if you were going to do that. I wanted to show that almost 100% of us will just go, I don't think so. I think I'd rather keep that information to myself. But some of you are partners and might be friends. So you should just turn around and say, well, when I was 9, my best friend had a pencil and I took it. But we don't. Mine was a hamster. I won't share that because it's quite a sad story. But now, but it wasn't back then. And I was 9, so that's my defense. Think about why you might not want to say what that bad thing is. Because it's not going to be illegal, I'm hoping. You haven't murdered anyone. You haven't stolen anything. You haven't caused, mass destruction to someone's life. Unless you believe in a cause and you've gone with it. But why might you not say what that bad thing is? Would it be shame? Would it be humiliation, distrust? Will it be you're not comfortable, you don't know how to say it, you don't know how to allow the words to come out? Just think about some of those reasons. So when we encounter a slave, we expect them to just roll out 27 answers because we've got 27 questions on our interview, whether it's a police officer or a social worker or an immigration officer, and just tell us the worst thing they've ever done in their whole life, which to them, just being raped by 20 men every day for 2 years, it's the worst thing that's ever happened to them, or having to run drugs or commit a robbery or a burglary or stab someone. And we just expect them to say that in a country where they don't know if they can trust, they don't know if, or they have been let down by the system. Think of our own British-born children who have gone through the system so many times over so many years that they no longer trust that the system can do anything for them. But we do have a number of other areas that causes that barrier to come in. If you have been abused, if you've seen violence from a very young age, a lot of the victims we deal with have seen that. They've seen domestic violence, they've seen sexual abuse, they've seen alcohol, drug dependency from the moment they were young. They've seen poverty and struggles, not just in this country, in other countries too. They build a resilience against anything that's bad. It's what I was born to. It's I've seen worse. Worse things happen to me. It's my fault. It's, I got myself into the situation. So you've got that self-blame and you've got that justification that it's okay. It's worse things happen to me. Nothing else I can do about it. This is my life. So it's very hard to work with that. Very, very hard to work with that. A lot of them suffer from PTSD. Just to give an example of how that works, and I'm not sure if you have suffered with that, but I certainly have. I lost my mom when I was 12 years old to cancer. And someone asked me a really silly question about a Christmas time. And I was trying to think, she died in January, so I was trying to think what I got for Christmas that particular year. She died in 98, so this is 97 to 98. And I cannot tell you what my Christmases looked like from age 9 to age 12. And age 9 is when I found out how really ill she was and helping her, becoming her carer. I cannot remember these 3 Christmases. So whatever happened to me in my brain, I must have blocked it out because I had to cope with other things that were greater or graver than just being a child. And it's that simple thing that I've grown up to be normal, I think. My partner might disagree. My colleagues might disagree. But I think I'm normal. I'm quite, strong and independent and can take care of myself. But there's certain parts of my childhood that are just gone. So that's the PTSD from the trauma of that time. So we expect these females to know what's happened to them, descriptions and locations, dates, times, different prices that might have paid for. When they can't give us that, we then call them liars. So again, you can see the character that's being built around the so-called sex workers, what actual cost in terms of humans. They're not believed. They cannot be trusted. Is what they want to do is their choice. Self-harm, suicidal, we see all that. Physical injuries, an interesting thing that we've started seeing in terms of UK is branding. Because you're someone's commodity. So whether it's a tattoo or a burn mark, most commonly at the back of the neck, we find the burn marks that actually identifies the actual brand of the organized crime group that particular body belongs to, because they've been purchased. And we started seeing a lot of that. In fact, it's so common with the children and the gangs that there are now services where they're offering tattoo removals to remove the brand and the logo of that particular gang, of who owns them once they've come through. So you've got those permanent marks that will stay with them. Of course, some of them will see violence. They will see actual physical violence to the point where they'll be left scarred or they'll be left damaged in terms of permanent damage. Sexual health, we have such a large number of STIs. Again, think about our systems. Sexually transmitted infection, something as simple as chlamydia, that could be treated very easily. They don't receive that treatment. They cannot access and will not access the clinics unless they're going for the condoms, and then they're under supervision by a boyfriend. Something as simple as chlamydia can actually turn you infertile. It can damage reproductive organs. Now, imagine being, the right to be a mom is removed just because a chapter in your life, you had to go through something as abusive as that. You cannot be a mom for the rest of your life. So again, think about some of those injuries. And long-term injuries, of course, you have long-term injuries. I wanted to keep it quite, this is light for me, believe me. When I went through my presentation originally, I thought, no, I can't bring you the complete world to this. What I wanted to bring to you is what we see as sex working and all these fantastic images that you see advertised with these perfect bodies, always the same sort of accents, perhaps Eastern Europeans or Orientals, Asians and so on. I don't know actually if I can use Oriental the word anymore. I think someone said it's out. We see that and we go, it is what it is. They want to do it. There's several hundred of them. It's a scene. It's dark. It's dirty. You know, you shouldn't do it. Any good, honest working woman would not do it. You get all of these comments coming through. And actually, when you look deeper, if they are a businesswoman, that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. That's your choice. But if they're not businesswomen, we see everything I've just shown you, plus more. It's not a sex working as a profession. This is a slavery where a human being is broken into a million pieces, most commonly by men. Apologies for those men in the room. I don't mean to sound like I've got an issue with gender, but most commonly by men. And in some cases, they are so broken that no one can save them. No one can put them back together. There is nothing in this world that you can. The organization I work with, we look at different concepts to try and support certain gaps and fund and demonstrate that those concepts are worthy and they will add value to anyone supporting this area, which is why I'm really happy to have with me a victim navigator. It's the first of its kind in the UK, in fact, in Europe, first of its kind. And what a victim navigator is becomes the go-to point for a identified victim where the police should not be, or a social worker should not be there, or anyone that's against everything that we stand for and believe in terms of how we should approach a victim of these crime types. So we have a victim navigator that walks the journey with the victims from the very first hour until 3 years later, if needs be, once they've recovered and they've come through the other side. So if you want to know a little bit more about Sarah and her role, and this is quite a unique sort of project that we're running, I'll let Sarah talk for about a minute. And then I'm happy to think about some questions and some of the comments that you might want to bring my way. I'm happy to answer those, and I think we'll be perfectly on time. I'm told we have to be out and not overrun. And that's my specialty, overrunning. So I'll let Sarah introduce herself. Think about some questions. I hope it was enough to give you a flavor of what that sexual slavery looks like. And I'm really curious and really eager to hear some of your thoughts. I can see a bit of anger going on here. I've seen your reaction quite a lot going through and in the back. So really curious to hear about your thoughts. Right, Sarah, over to you.
Sorry to block you. As Chris said, I'm a victim navigator for Justice and Care. I'm based in Surrey Police Headquarters, so I basically get the first-hand look at ongoing investigations of potential victims of human trafficking and modern slavery. The victim navigator role is especially intended for adults with complex needs who are being rescued out of exploitation, out of slavery. And what we're looking to do is support around 20 victims each year, testing it for 2 years with the hopes that it will be successful and we'll be able to roll that out across more forces. So at this point, it's early days. We're just starting to look at supporting a few victims of sexual exploitation with complex mental health needs. Ones who are willing to engage and who want to kind of go through the court system and hopefully see their traffickers prosecuted. The goal is that not only are we supporting victims, but we're also supporting police who actually have the expertise and need the time to prosecute and to get the evidence and hopefully send traffickers to prison. And we're the experts who come in and support the victims and free up that police time. So it's an exciting opportunity. Hopefully we'll be back next year to talk about kind of the results of what we found. But we're here to take some questions if you have any.
So the what we identified is that it takes an average of about 18 months to work with a female rescued that's been completely broken before she's strong enough to even give a statement. And it's so important that we support individuals not just in recovering and being given opportunities to start again a completely new life that they've never seen before, but also to try and identify those who are actually committing these crimes, because there will always be a source, they'll always be looking for a supply. So if it's not this girl who we rescued, there'll be 25 other girls they'll find by tomorrow, or they will groom and they'll bring into this world. So it is important that what we do in terms of justice and care is finding both the source of the offending, but also where and what does that look like for us? What do we actually need? What are the tools, the weapons we need to have in place to actually fight this particular crime and eradicate it? So happy to open any questions for Sarah if you want to know more. But are there any thoughts or questions before we close the session? Yes?
I work for a church organisation in London, and we're planning a Lent appeal for next year, highlighting modern slavery and what parishes can do. We're starting to prepare this now. Just wondering what sorts of tools could you suggest? I see there's a helpline if people have suspicions about slavery happening in their neighbourhood or thing. What else could you possibly suggest that we could pass on?
Can you repeat?
Yes. So, in terms of running something for Lent next year, I believe Clure Initiative has actually run something similar this year, where every day they would put up a notice or a piece of info on what a particular type of slavery might look like and what you can do about it on that particular day. But in terms of reporting or finding out more about this particular area, Modern Slavery Helpline is your probably go-to helpline, because they are paid by the government and they've got a contract from the government. But you don't have to report anything. You can just call them and have a conversation with them. If something doesn't feel right or if it doesn't look right, give them a call. And they will walk you through a number of questions where you'll naturally identify if you've got something or not to report. So anything that you come across. Of course, you've got their website as well. But there are a number of other organizations, NGOs, Justice and Care, Stop the Traffic, the Snowdrop Project. You've got so many other websites that you can go and find out, and each area will have a different set of indicators, whether it's forced labor or whether it's sexual exploitation. So it's worthy looking further into it in terms of what's out there and what it is that you can do about it. A really good and interesting, actually, I'm gonna have to mention Day 46. I'm gonna have to. Poppy Project. Day 46, that's all you have to Google, use the any engine search. And you'll find out some amazing stories and some things that happens after we've come in, we've rescued them, we've given them the safe house, they got everything they could for a few days or a couple of weeks, about 45 days, give or take, and then there's a cliff edge. Out you go into the big wide world. You've never learned to write or read or learn any form of structure in your life. You've always been abused. You have complex mental health needs, psychological needs. And then everything stops once you're out of the safe house. If there are no providers to provide further support, which is for majority of the cases, there isn't. And what happens on day 46? And the report is called Day 46. Have I given it justice? Sophie Hayes now. Okay. Right, Sophie Hayes Foundation. So go to Day 46, Modern Slavery, and that'll come through. So yes, there's a number of things you can read out there that really gives you the picture of what's going on in the UK, how many victims have been identified, whereabouts are they, different trends like pop-up brothels, you know, that they come across, they're just another trend. The caravan is now used, the house share is used for short periods of time, and females are exploited them. So yeah, just look into it and you'll find so much more information. Yeah.
You talked about the Kent and Surrey police that you've worked with. I'm in the further north of England and involved in the Snowdrop project. What is your understanding of how police themselves on the ground really understand the situation? I'm not sure.
I will be fair. So it's hit and miss. I'll repeat the question. The question is, what is my understanding of what other police forces are doing and their understanding of this crime type, given that Essex and Kent and Surrey had sort of someone like me or myself to help them? It's hit and miss in terms of the responses. You have 43 police forces and the Metropolitan Police. There are about 20 police forces who are really proactive. And then there's the rest of the forces who are just reactive. And even when they are reacting to something, it's perhaps an immigration matter, depending on the nationality, or it's seen as a prostitution offence first. So it does depend where you are, where in the UK you are. Some forces are fantastic at understanding it. But they're only as good as someone coordinating and supporting them and leading them on all the time. So you do need someone to focus on. And you've got thousands of crime types that they also have to be on point. And the specialist units are not. I think there's 4 specialist units in 4 different police forces in the whole of UK that looks at serious and organized crime, specifically modern slavery and human trafficking. So you don't have that specialist response, which this crime dictates you should, because of the organized element, because of the money laundering, because of the firearms and the drugs element. It's not just sex working with a bit of money. There's always a lot more going on. So it's hit and miss on the response. A lot more could be done.
Could I just follow up briefly by saying, rather cynically, is it likely to be better in those, better understanding from the police in those areas where they have uncovered rings of paedophilia and organised crime?
They are now. I think I'm confident that in some of the areas you perhaps reference to, it takes sometimes a lot of protesting, a lot of advocating, a lot of failed cases, a lot of failed victims, a lot of offenders walking away for free or without being sort of dealt with before lessons are learned. In terms of conviction rates for modern slavery, if I compare that to sexual offences in terms of rape convictions in the UK is only between 3 to 6% conviction rate against identified suspects and victims, which is very, very low, given that we've got so many thousands, hundreds of thousands of cases reported. Modern slavery is 6 to 7% conviction rate against identified victims. And given that we've identified 4,500 victims last year, that's not a bad conviction rate and the complexity around it if you compare it to other crime types. So slowly, that something is happening, something is coming through, but... yeah, it's very slow.
Therapy. Are some of the counties actually giving putting funding into therapy work for some of these victims?
So if some of the counties are putting any funds towards therapy, towards the victims identified, the government is. Central government is paying towards something that's called the National Referral Mechanism, which is the contract is given to Salvation Army. They have the contract to run. And essentially, if a victim consents to being helped and being supported, they do have the choice of going into a safe house. And there's a number of safe houses and subcontractors across UK. And they're given around 45 days in a safe location where counselling is part of their package, but it takes an average, I think, of 6 months to actually get from the waiting list to receiving something. So there is, in some cases, it is sort of the counselling is available, but it may not always be the right counselling. Just whatever the NHS has available may not be the correct. But,
Yeah, also what's interesting is I've been visiting a lot of rape crisis centers and ISVAs, independent sexual violence advocates, who work with victims of sexual exploitation, among other things. And they offer counseling, often though it's not in the source language of the country where people are from, which is a huge gap we're trying to meet with other alternatives. Also though, the waiting lists are often over 6 months for them to get counseling. And at that point, they're past their 45 days of statutory support. They may be returned to their country. They may have gone missing again, been re-trafficked. It's a real gap in the system right now that we're trying to address.
Yep. Then we'll be done, yeah?
For brothels that are actually visible at street level, what work can you do to actually try and
So the brothels that they are visible at a street level, how do we know if the women in the brothels are victims?
I just wondered what proportion you think could actually traffic.
The proportion of it. 76% of the sex workers identified in 2017 were trafficked victims. So that's 7.6 in every 10 out of 10. So it's a very high number, very high number. And we are seeing children on the increase as well through child sexual exploitation. The British-born children being trafficked for forced criminality and sex rose up by 200% from 2016 to 2017. So the figures just went absolutely. We're seeing an increase in them. Okay, at the back, and then yourself, and then I think you're going to check me out. My background or Sarah's? Sarah, okay.
So prior to doing this current job as a victim navigator, I was working in Guildford and Surrey as a probation officer with vulnerable adults leaving the prison system. So that involved kind of a caseload of around 80 offenders, ex-offenders, who were also incredibly vulnerable populations in need of very similar support systems and reintegrating into a community, which I'm glad I did because that showed me the other side and made it a bit less black and white and, yeah, appreciating kind of victim needs.
You have got a lot more, but you're being very, very polite about it. There's a lot more in the background. Okay, last question.
I was just wondering about, you say the percentage is on the increase. Is it just we're better at identifying and accepting? Because I can remember that about 10, 12 years, we talk about child prostitutes.
Yeah.
Even that far ago, I mean, it's disgusting that they were spoken about that way. But we are getting better at identifying.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's both. Not only are we better, especially learning through mistakes, so just think Rochdale and so on. You learn from them, from those mistakes. But also the trends have changed. So think about your nail bars and your car washes 5 years ago to 10 years ago. Very, very few. Very rarely would you actually find one. Now they're everywhere. Everywhere you turn, there is one. So the trends are changing on how a human being is exploited. So if we're looking at children being sexually exploited, what we are seeing, a new trend that we're seeing, is the gangs sort of based in, say, London, branching out of London into counties, and they go as far out as they possibly can, whether it's Norfolk, Suffolk, you know, Surrey, Sussex, and so on. And we're seeing the exploitation along that particular line in a different type of a trend that we didn't see 5 to 7 years ago. So it's both. It's understanding that a child cannot be a prostitute, but also the fact that other types of crimes, like violence being on the rise, stabbings and shootings, highlights the other activities of a gang where children are identified. Are there any other questions that you might want to? Yeah? One last one.
You said that 66% of the rape were trafficked. How do you understand the other 24%?
Yeah, so it's a number of things. So, for example, you'd be location checks where victims have been identified through warrants and operations. So they say out of 1,000 locations we've been to and we've spoken to 1,000 individuals that we found in these locations, 760 we've identified as victims. Then there's the intelligence that's received from customers or from victims themselves or someone who knows the victims. Then we have information that's shared between other member states, where perhaps an individual is reported missing in one country but is found in the UK, or is found at the border of trying to enter UK. So there's a number of ways. We can never truly say how many victims there are, how many brothels, how many sex workers, how many businesswomen or businessmen there are. We can only base those statistics on who we've actually identified, given a location check, a rescue, someone escaped, or information that's come to light. So out of that information, that number is victims identified of human trafficking.
Question of what I was meaning it to be, who make up the other 24% that have chosen this?
The individual human being, just like you and I, who chooses sex working as their profession. Women, males, it's their choice. They can do that. If they want to be a sex worker, they can. They cannot be in a brothel and they cannot be a madam or a pimp. But you can be a sex worker in this country and be a businesswoman, providing you pay your taxes and you do your tax returns. What you choose to do as a job by yourself, that's your choice. That part is not illegal. So it's women and men who choose to be legally working, fully covered, fully taxes paying individuals, which makes it okay. So escorting, for example. Okay, I think for the Monday evening, this is it. Thank you very much for your time, and I'll pass you back to Sarah.
Thank you. Just before we thank Christina, I want to offer a few other thoughts just on the 24% of people. I think I've worked with a lot of women in prison, women recovering from addictions, and I would say there's probably three categories: the trafficked women, and there absolutely are people that have chosen to do this in a sense that we would understand good choices with the ability to make good choices in their life. There's a trade union that has a branch for sex workers, for example. And then I'd say there's a third group that are ostensibly choosing, quote unquote, but at a future point in their life when they look back, they say, that was no choice. I wouldn't now that I'm not addicted, or now that I'm not, you know, whatever the scenario is, that it felt like a choice potentially at the time. But some people look back and say, actually, I wouldn't ever choose that in my best life, or I wouldn't choose that for my friends or for my children. So, but I mean, this is a very subjective area, and that's my personal opinion. It's not a red tent or a green belt or Christina's opinion. That's my personal opinion. But I just wanted to kind of offer that as well. Lovely. Well, thank you so much for taking us so sensitively through some really difficult material. And obviously there's some difficult stuff in the world, but if we don't bring it into the light, you know, if we don't hear from experts, if we don't educate and inform ourselves, we can't begin to change some of these really profound injustices, some of these gender injustices that you guys are working on day in, day out. So thank you for your work. Thank you for sharing it with us. Can we give a round of applause?